It used to be that a diagnosis of cancer came with advice to rest as much as possible. But, you know, research has shown that you should actually avoid inactivity. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is the Ideas Network. Our next guest is Dr. Catherine Schmitz. She is a distinguished professor at the Penn State Cancer Institute. She's a leading researcher in exercise oncology and the author of the book Moving Through Cancer, an exercise and strength training program for the fight of your life. Have you been treated for cancer? Were you told to exercise? What questions do you have about the benefits of exercise? Join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send us an email at WPR.org. Dr. Schmitz, thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Now, in your book, you cite a lot of research that confirms that exercise is so beneficial for cancer treatments before, after, during. How long have these studies been going on?
Oh, you know, I actually, in my first book, which was called Exercise Oncology, which was an academic text, I had the opportunity to write a lead-in chapter on the history of exercise oncology. And you and your listeners might be surprised to hear that there was a study from Minnesota in 1911 that showed a benefit of being more active and less incidence of cancer from a Dr. Ewing.
My gosh, that must have surprised you when you found that out.
It did. It did. There actually was a smattering of animal studies throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s as well. Many of which started with the concept that they were going to use exercise as a stressor, a negative stressor, in order to induce cancer, because they were trying to show that stress was a negative, you know, that would cause cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, study after study kept coming back saying that the animals that they exercised were less likely to develop cancer. And so what was funny to me was that, you know, there were probably five or six of these papers throughout, you know, the last century before, you know, someone somewhere started to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's a pattern here.
Right.
And maybe exercise actually is helpful to reduce the risk of cancer. And the field really started taking off in the 1980s with large epidemiologic observational studies that showed in particular that being more physically active reduced the likelihood of developing colon cancer. So we've known about that for decades and decades, but the first human clinical trials of, exercising cancer patients while they were undergoing treatment took place at the Ohio State University in the 1980s.
That's still a long time ago. My father was diagnosed with four different types of cancer in his life, and he was never told to exercise as part of his treatment. Now, why don't we hear more about using it? Why aren't the people treating cancer patients prescribing this, basically?
Right. So, you know, I love this question, and you're going to need to give me a few minutes to answer it.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a complex answer.
Yeah.
The first thing is that there is a culture issue, right? So the culture of cancer is to rest and take it easy. And when you sort of close your eyes and picture somebody receiving cancer treatment, you probably see them sitting in a big chair with a blanket over their knees. Maybe even napping, right?
Yes.
That is the image that we all have in our heads of cancer. And that doesn't have to be the case anymore. But the way that medicine is taught is through kind of an apprenticeship model. And so if the senior clinicians that you're learning to practice medicine from are telling their patients to rest and take it easy, then you're going to do the same. So we have an uphill battle of trying to help to train oncology clinicians that not only is it safe for their patients to be physically active during and after treatment, but that actually it will help them with their symptoms and side effects and may indeed help with their tolerance of treatment, which could have survival benefits. So if I can go back for just a second, though, in history and give you an example of this kind of culture change and what has to happen, I like to tell the story of Eisenhower as president having had a heart attack in the 1950s, and his cardiologist at the time was sharply criticized for getting President Eisenhower out of bed so quickly, 3 weeks after his heart attack.
3 weeks.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, 3 weeks, which now is crazy, right?
Yeah.
So today we get people sitting up the same day. We get them out of bed the next day. We get them to cardiac rehab within a week, right?
Yep.
So we know that now, but that's been a massive culture change, right?
Yes.
And so now if you talk to anyone in the United States with an eighth grade education and say, hey, is exercise good for the heart? Should someone with heart disease be physically active? They're going to say yes, because there's been this massive culture shift that tells everybody that they connect heart disease with exercise. Well, we need to do the same thing with cancer. And cancer is not just one disease. So it's more complex, because we have to do it for breast cancer, for colon cancer, for prostate cancer, for lung cancer, et cetera. So
right.
It's going to take a while.
Yes. Well, thank you for heading that battle, because it's an important one for sure. Now, it was really interesting to read that not only is exercise effective when people are going through the treatment and after it, but it can even help prevent some forms of cancer. Why don't you talk a little bit about more of that?
Sure. So there have been, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of large studies with millions of participants that have been able to show us that exercise on a regular basis, 150 to 300 minutes of moderate intensity exercise like brisk walking or swimming or cycling, is associated with about a 10 to 20% reduction of risk for anywhere between 7 and 10 cancers, depending on the study that you look at. The common ones that we see in all of these studies include breast and colon and sometimes lung, depending on the studies that are included, endometrial cancer, ovarian cancer, esophageal, stomach, kidney. So there are a number of cancers that we know we have a preventive effect for. And the dose of exercise recommended, again, is 150 to 300 minutes a week of moderate intensity exercise. Now, you asked me also about prevention of recurrence, I believe. And, we do have some evidence that for three very common cancers, we have a massive reduction in the likelihood of death from these cancers. And that is breast, colon, and prostate. Now, I want to make sure that you heard me. I did not say prostate when I talked about the primary prevention. We do not have any evidence that tells us that physical activity reduces the risk of onset of prostate cancer. But very interestingly, physical activity is associated with reduction of risk for death from prostate cancer after men have been diagnosed.
It's two different things. Yeah. So reoccurrence.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. That is two different things.
And the reduction of risk for recurrence is actually much greater. So it's more like in the 30 to 50% reduction of risk range, which is like a medicine. That's
right.
A big, big reduction of risk.
Wow. That is amazing. So why that hasn't, isn't prescribed more often, it's just, it's amazing to think about that. So during and before you have a treatment for cancer, you talk about that a lot. You talk about your wife who was diagnosed with cancer, and how, even though she was, she's in really good shape to begin with, but how you helped her become even more fit and how it helped her with her treatments. And she's not the only person that happened. Why does that help the body during cancer treatments? What does that do?
Right. So if somebody is approaching cancer treatments, the thing to understand is that by virtue of the rest that is necessary because of the cancer treatments. You know, there is with surgery in particular, there's a period of rest that's needed. But in addition, because of the medicines that are used for treating cancer and because of the side effects that occur because of treating, you know, the various treatments for cancer, the cardiovascular system is attacked, if you will, by all of these treatments. And the musculoskeletal system actually takes a big hit as well. So we lose muscle mass the longer we rest. The pulmonary system, the lungs, all of our breathing apparatus does not work as well after we've been through a period of rest and some of these treatments and medicines as well. So, and the kidneys, you know, every single body system doesn't work as well after we've been through these treatments. And so it's the way, you know, the prehabilitation concept is that you increase the capacity of the body in all of these different body systems by being more physically active, by eating an extra healthy diet, by reducing stress, smoking cessation. All of these different aspects come together. And if we can improve how all of these systems are functioning, then as you go through the cancer treatment, when you finish, you're kind of back where you started, but that's certainly better than a decrement. It's better than having worsening function, worsening cardiovascular health. So that's the concept behind prehabilitation. It's been proven over and over and over again in so many diseases. We ought to be using this not just in cancer, but for anybody who's going to have any kind of large medical procedure. They ought to be doing a prehabilitation program before they go in.
And we've talked about a number of times we've got physical therapists that come in on a regular basis and how big of a difference that makes when you're having any kind of surgery for knees, hips, what have you. What you do beforehand makes a big difference. So, yeah.
Yes. Now, see, that's the piece that I just gnash my teeth at, mm-hmm. I will tell you, because I know that at many large institutions, they have protocolized the concept of, the orthopedic surgeons say, I am not going to do a total knee replacement on this person until they have done X amount of physical therapy and strengthened around the knee. And yet we allow cancer surgeries and cancer treatments to occur, which are equally, we can predict what's going to happen.
Right. You know, right.
People are going to lose cardiovascular function.
Yeah. And the outcomes are so much different. I mean, look at the research of the outcomes, so much better with dealing with it.
If they can continue the exercise as they're going through, you know, the systemic treatments as well, that really, really makes a big difference.
For sure.
That's difficult, but helpful.
Yes, for sure. And we've got a couple of minutes before we break for news, but tell me about your book. Now, just like I said, just kind of go over, gloss over what's in it. What do you have in it? Sure. And what was your point of writing it?
Sure. So the point of writing it was that, we need this culture change. We need to change the culture around cancer so that people understand that they should be moving through their cancer. And I had the excellent good fortune of really getting to know a British surgeon by the name of Liz O'Riordan, who is herself a breast cancer survivor. And she said to me one day, there were days going through treatment where I couldn't remember how to spell the word potato. Ugh. And, as a surgeon, and I thought, okay, that's who I'm writing the book for. I'm writing this book in a way that it should be accessible for people as they are dealing with the strife and the stress of going through a cancer treatment. So it is intended to greet people walking in the door at any point in their cancer journey and to help guide them in a very, very simple program so that they become more active, stay more active, and decrease the negative effects of their cancer treatment on their bodies, their minds, and their ability to cope.
And when you say simple, it is very accessible. I was I was pleasantly surprised by that, that this is not rocket science, as they say.
No.
It's easier. It's very easy, very nice diagrams, very simple chart type of things. And you have a great website that kind of that goes right with it. So we're talking with Dr. Catherine Schmitz about her book, Moving Through Cancer, an Exercise and Strength Training Program for the Fight of Your Life. What questions or comments do you have? 800-642-1234. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. We're talking about using exercise to help you fight cancer. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is the Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Dr. Catherine Schmitz. She is a distinguished professor at Penn State Cancer Institute and a leading researcher in exercise oncology. She's the author of the book, Moving Through Cancer, an exercise and strength training program at the for the fight of your life. What would you like to know about using exercise to help you get through a cancer diagnosis? Did moving more help you when you were going through your treatment? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Join by calling 800-642-1234 or send us an email at wpr.org. So we were talking before we had the break there about exercise helping during cancer treatment. What specific problems does it help address?
Well, there are a number of things that we have researched. There was a team that came together to review 16 different common effects of cancer treatment to see, what works and what doesn't work. And of the 16 things that were reviewed, we were able to conclude that an exercise program during cancer treatment and after cancer treatment can be very helpful. And those outcomes are fatigue, cancer-related fatigue. That's a big one and very, very common during and after cancer treatment. Anxiety, about 45% of cancer patients report anxiety. Depression, about a quarter of cancer patients report ongoing depression during and after treatment. Changes in physical function, by which we mean the ability to do the things that you're used to being able to do in your life, whether that's caring for children, carrying a case of water into your house, mowing your lawn, whatever it is that you need to do physically, your ability to do that is what we call your physical function. Sleep. We know that exercise helps with sleep. We also know that it is safe for breast cancer-related lymphedema. It may or may not be helpful for lymphedema. So those are some of the outcomes that we know are helped by being more physically active. The things that we think might be helped, but for which we don't have enough evidence yet, are cardiotoxicity, which is to say the damaging effects of cancer treatments on the heart, and peripheral neuropathy, the tingling and numbness in the hands and feet that can occur as a result of going through chemotherapy in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
there are things that are still in the hopper. If you will. There are still things that we're doing research on.
And that's one of the things I did appreciate in your book is that, like you said, you do yoga, you like yoga, but you have no research to say that if this is going to
going to
help you. So that's a really important point in this book. It's all research-based. We've been talking about exercise here, but we've been saying it in kind of a broad sense. And to that point, what forms of exercise have been researched?
Right. So the two forms of exercise that have been most heavily studied in cancer populations are aerobic exercise, by which I mean brisk walking, jogging, swimming, cycling, Zumba, anything that gets your heart rate up and gets your blood moving and you start to feel a little breathless. If you're doing that, then you're doing aerobic exercise. And the other form of exercise that's been studied most heavily is resistance exercise, so weight training, resistance exercise.
Okay. And we do have a couple of callers on the line. So let's go to Joan in Muscadet. Hi, Joan.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet. What's your question? Joan, are you... cut out there, Joan. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, my husband was diagnosed with chronic leukemia. He's 70 years old. And there was no mention of exercise. Is there anything that she could say about the possible benefits for him?
Absolutely. So chronic leukemia is its own particular scenario, as you all have no doubt figured out. It's something that he's going to deal with for a long time. And so one of the things that we know will occur for him is a challenge to his blood counts and a challenge to likely his balance and a challenge likely to his physical function. We know that if he is able to do more aerobic exercise and keep his muscle mass up through resistance exercise, that he will be able to more likely withstand the treatments that he is offered by his physicians as time goes forward. One thing that might be of particular interest to you, though, is that given the fact that he might end up with some balance issues, you may want to choose to help him with exercise that he would do in a seated position or at least in a supported position.
Okay, so seated position or supported position, in case you didn't quite hear that, Joan. And you do have... you have videos on your website, Dr. Schmitz.
I do.
That people can take a look at. So
yeah, so that actually is sort of an easy button for you. If you go to movingthroughcancer.com and go to the section that has the videos and handouts, there is actually a set of videos for seated exercise programs, and that would be a great place to start for your husband, Joan.
Yep, and they're very well done. Again, it's movingthroughcancer.com, and we do have a link on our website, too, on this particular program note. So good luck with that, Joan, and to your husband. Let's go to Lori in Shawnee. Hi, Lori.
Hi. You had mentioned a lot about strength training as far as, like, controlling or helping with these operations that you get for cancer, but one thing that I don't think you've talked about is the endorphins that are released when you do this exercise, and that would help with post-operative problems that you would have also. And I thought about this. I can't even imagine doing this, but some people get depression after they've had, I think it's a sedative. And I read in the same book about how, I can't even imagine it at this time of year, but dipping yourself in cold water. And there is a woman that was off of treatment for depression for 2 years because she would do that. And as cold as it is now, I can't even imagine doing that, but I guess it helps.
I can't either, but I think that the concept of providing the body with some kind of cardiovascular challenge, and that cardiovascular challenge or the endorphins, the response of endorphins from being active, not just from resistance training, but from aerobic exercise as well, absolutely has everything in the world to do with the benefits that we see of exercise during and after cancer treatment. I will say that I think that, you know, the prehabilitation program we talked about before also has the potential to really help with that post-surgical time frame and avoiding the depression of post-surgery.
For sure. Well, thank you, Lori. Okay, so I know it's hard for me, it's hard for most people to get motivated to exercise when we're actually feeling okay. So how do you motivate someone who's been diagnosed with cancer or who's going through chemo or radiation treatments?
Yeah, you know, I think motivation needs to come from within in order for it to stick. And so one of the things that we talk about in the book is trying to look inside to figure out for yourself, well, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to me to exercise? And if your answer isn't 0, and for a lot of people it will be, maybe it's a 2, you know, but it's not a zero, then the question is, well, what are the benefits for me? What do I care about? Maybe it's the ability to get on the floor and play with grandchildren. Maybe it's the ability to get to a particular social event that is important to you that's upcoming. Whatever it is that is important to you, that is what could be most motivating for exercise, rather than somebody telling you that exercise is good for you for some side effect. I think that really we have to look from within and figure out what might be important to the specific patient.
That makes total sense. Tell us about your 10-minute rule. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, so this actually has come up as sort of a practice point for us. You know, if you want to think of exercise oncology clinical practice, we weren't quite sure how to guide people, and we started this rule, and then we started talking to other people around the country, and it turns out that we have this de facto rule that people use in exercise oncology, and that is, you know, when you are dealing with a patient who is not feeling up to snuff and is not quite sure, like, should I be exercising today or not? I don't know. The answer is try for the first 10 minutes. And if you can do 10 minutes, you then, at the end of the 10 minutes, decide, do I feel better? Do I feel worse? Do I feel the same? If you feel the same or better, keep going. If you feel worse, then you know, nope, not today. I did enough. I did 10 minutes worth, and that's enough for today. And you try again another day. But that's the 10-minute rule. And, I'll share a story from my personal history. My mother had congestive heart failure, and I had a difficult time getting her to continue exercising in the last few years of her life. And so my rule with her was, well, you just need to put the sneakers on and go down to the gym. And, you know, the gym was actually in the same complex where she lived.
Okay.
That's all. That's your rule. That's the rule. You just have to put on the shoes and walk down there. And I knew what would happen, and it did every single time. And that is, she would get down there, she'd see the other people exercising, and then she'd join them. And so really, you know, there are lots of famous quotes in exercise. Jim Fix said the hardest part of running is putting your shorts on or putting your shoes on. And it's very, very, very true that the hardest part of exercise is getting started. So just put the shoes on, stand up, and walk around the house. Just do that. Just do that. That's an exercise program for today.
Absolutely. You got to begin. Once you begin, that's the hard part. So excellent. Talk about the program that you have in your book. You based it on 21 days. So why 21?
Oh, that was an idealized idea that basically, you know, I really thought hard about that. Actually about, you know, what do I do? How many days do I put in here? I really thought about, you know, one person is going to have a week between their diagnosis and their cancer surgery. Another person is going to have a month. My wife had a month. Other people are going to have 6 to 8 weeks. And so I basically gave a 21-day program, the idea being this is probably somewhere in between what the average is, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that it's 21 days, but if you only have a week, great, do the first week worth. If you have 4 weeks, then do the 3 weeks and repeat the last week again. And so it was 21 days, and the prehabilitation program that you're talking about is the most intensive thing in the book. And it really asks people to work hard. You're training like you're training for something that is an athletic event, because indeed going through cancer treatment is as tough on your body as an athletic event.
Yes. Now, and for those people who are maybe a little more athletic to begin with, you make, mm-hmm. you know, you abide for that too. You've got that written into it. So if you don't do anything, or if you're an athlete, you can use that, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So actually, we actually worry much more about the people who are athletic coming into their cancer treatment and about their exercise than we do about people who are completely sedentary. If you're completely sedentary, I know exactly what to give you. I know how to prescribe your exercise as you're approaching your cancer, as you're going through your cancer treatment. But if I have somebody who is like Keegan Randall, who was a U.S. gold medalist Olympian and 3 months later was diagnosed with an aggressive breast cancer, what am I telling her,
right?
How do I guide her? So we have a chapter in the book that has the stories of 6 or 7 different elite athletes and what their experience was. And, so mostly what they found was that they could continue to do way more than anybody might have expected. But on the other hand, that they needed to listen to their bodies. Now, this is the secret sauce, and I want to explain to you the secret sauce because it's extremely important and it's sort of baked into the whole book. And it's really easy to explain when we talk about the athletes. In an athlete uses their body regularly, hours a day, so that if they go out for a run and they feel a little different, they know it, because they're using their body all the time. And so when they have a change in symptom, they really understand, something's really off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, the analogy would be, you know, driving your car. Do you drive your car on a regular basis? Then you know when you've got a rattle, right? When you've got some new rattle in the car, right? Well, if you are sedentary, you're not used to paying attention to your body, and then you start to go through cancer and you have a symptom, what is it? What is the symptom? Is it a problem? It is not a problem. Do I need to call a doctor? Do I need to do something about this? You know way less about your body than the athlete does. But by being physically active on a regular basis during your cancer treatment, you are helping not just you, you're helping your doctors, because you are then able to come back and say, you know, last week I was able to walk 1.5 miles around my neighborhood. This week, I am so tired, I can barely walk 0.5 miles. Then you know something is really different, and your doctors know something is different, and they know what they can do to try to help you. So by using not just the exercise, but the logging that we recommend within the book, you are not just helping yourself, you're helping your doctors to help you.
Great. That's a great comment on that. You talk about moving as far as like walking and aerobic, but you also talk about strength training in the book as well as this movement. Why is that important too?
Right. So one of the things that we think exercise is particularly helpful for during and after cancer diagnosis is for maintaining muscle mass. We've talked about the culture of cancer being one of, you know, rest and take it easy and sitting with a blanket over your knees. And, you know, that cancer is something that happens to you and that you, you know, are sort of passive with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an old-fashioned way of thinking about cancer. And with that kind of rest, the thing for you and your listeners to know is that muscle is going to atrophy with just a week of rest. With just a week of rest, you have enormous atrophy of muscle in the body. And that means that you're less able to climb stairs. You're less able to do physically the things to get out of a chair. You're less able to walk. You're less able to do the things that you want and need to do in your life. And strength training, if you are willing to do something twice a week for 30 minutes through your cancer treatment, choose strength training. Just do the strength training portion of the program. The videos are on the website. You can follow the videos. The book has the diagrams. You can follow the diagrams. But that's not a big ask. Twice a week for 30 minutes, and that will help you to maintain your muscle mass. Huge benefit as we go through treatment, because as we lose muscle mass, a couple of things happen. One, we lose our ability to do the things that we want to do through our daily lives. But two, and very importantly, by losing muscle mass, it changes the way that chemotherapy drugs go through the body. The body clears chemotherapy drugs through either fat tissue or through muscle tissue. And if it's going through the muscle tissue and you have less muscle, guess what? The chemotherapy stays in the body longer, which means more side effects, which means it's harder to tolerate, which could have a negative effect on survival. So we want to keep our muscle mass up, especially as we're going through chemotherapy, by doing strength training.
And for those listening who maybe are going through this, have a loved one going through it, and their medical, the people they're working with in the medical field haven't mentioned this to them, haven't talked about right. exercise, how would you suggest that they approach them with this information?
Well, I'm happy to say that the American Society of Clinical Oncology, which is the major medical organization for medical oncologists in the United States, and those are the folks that deliver chemotherapy, they did a survey of over 800 medical oncologists across the United States a couple of years ago, and I'm delighted to tell you that close to 80% of the respondents indicated that they agreed that it was important for their patients to be physically active during and after their cancer treatment. So I think that most medical oncologists, certainly surgical oncologists and radiation oncologists, are in agreement that their patients should be doing this. The challenge is that oncology practice is really complicated now, and so they have so many different things that they need to pay attention to. They need to pay attention to somebody's sexual health. They need to pay attention to all the side effects. There are all of the various new medicines for them to consider for treatment. There's so many things for them to have in mind in that short appointment that they have with their patient. And so they have a difficult time finding time to talk about physical activity with their patients. The unfortunate thing about that is that there's also published research to show us that if a cancer patient doesn't hear about exercise from their clinician, they equate that with having been told not to exercise. And so what I would encourage is for people listening here who are wondering if this woman on the radio is crazy, to talk to their physician and say, are you interested in, are you interested in having me be more physically active? Would this be helpful to me? And I'm pretty sure that most of the physicians that they talk to will say yes.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you so much for writing this book. We've been talking with Dr. Catherine Schmitz, a leading researcher in exercise oncology. Her book is called Moving Through Cancer, an exercise and strength training program for the fight of your life. And please check out her website. It's movingthroughcancer.com. Join us tomorrow. We'll talk about bald eagle watching days and learning about the Wisconsin maple sugar industry. I'm Jill Nadeau.